And I remember thinking the weirdest things. I actually remember thinking I was actually going to die. And it was the first time it's ever happened in my life. Hopefully it's the last time it's ever going to happen. But I just remember feeling it so strongly. And then laughing in the surf, laughing, thinking I can't die, I've only just got married.
Hello, and welcome to Off Track. My name's Anne Jones, and I'll be hosting the program for this year. You'll get to hear a bit more from Melanie later on in this program and how she almost drowned in a rip a couple of years ago. She came very close to becoming one of 21 people who die in rips each year on Australian beaches. And with a number as high as that, why don't we know more about rips? Dr. Rob Brander is a coastal geomorphologist who's been studying rip currents for many, many years. But it was actually a day on a beach as a tourist in New Zealand that changed his research path forever.
It was flat, calm, beautiful day, and there were these rocks around, and I saw this very weak rip current. And the way I spotted it was because the surface was a bit bumpy and ripply, because often, you know, rips take water out, waves bring it back in, the texture looks different. And I took the picture for my students to show that even when waves are really small, when you get rocks around, you can get a little rip. But we didn't think anything of it because it was nothing. And then we went swimming further down the beach and we heard some shouts and we swam out and we got to this young guy who was holding up an older man who, when we got to him, had clearly drowned. And we got him back to the beach as fast as we could, and he was a 60-year-old German tourist. He was there with his wife and his grandkids, and I just thought, how did this happen? It was a terrible experience. But what was really creepy was when I got my pictures developed a few weeks later, there was a man standing in the foreground of that rip in waist-deep water, and that was the man that drowned. And that really hit me hard because I thought, you know, is my research really saving lives? I've got this knowledge. It's not being communicated to the public. It's being communicated to the scientists. And that was the moment where I really decided, well, I almost have this obligation to teach people what I know about rips. He should never have drowned. All rip currents are potentially avoidable. If you don't get in a rip current, you're not going to drown in one. And just a little bit of knowledge could have saved his life, and it could save anyone's life who's caught in a rip. And that was a defining moment for me.
Thank you for coming. My name is Dr. Rob Brander, and I'm an associate professor at the University of New South Wales.
Since then, Rob Brander has given hundreds of talks on the science of the surf, trying to explain what rips are, how to spot them, and importantly, how they're a normal part in the life of a beach.
A wave is just a movement of energy through a medium, and that medium in this case is water. So you've got energy moving through a water body, whether it's an ocean or a lake. The water within a wave is actually moving in these circular orbits underneath the wave. So the top of the wave, the crest, will push the water forward, and the bottom of the wave, the trough, will pull the water back. But the water won't go anywhere. It won't move in a net direction until you get in the shallow water. But in simple terms, when waves break, the water that's trapped in those orbital motions is released, and it causes the water level to rise a little bit. Now, it's about 10% of the wave height, so if a 1 meter wave breaks, the water level will rise about 10 centimeters. Now, you can't see that with the naked eye. So you've got a gradient in the water level. You've got areas of high water, and you've got areas of low water, and the water flows towards that gradient, and that's the beginning of a rip. Rip currents are like rivers of the sea, and just like rivers, most of them sit in deep channels between shallow sandbanks, and they flow in one direction. And they're narrow, they're about 10, 20 meters wide, and they're there to take that water that's coming in with the breaking waves back offshore. And because it's deeper, it looks darker, and waves don't break as much in deep water. So it looks like this green gap, it might be 5, 10, 20, 30 meters wide between areas of white water. And my slogan is white is nice, green is mean. When you're looking at the beach, wherever you see a lot of white water, it means it's shallow, the waves are breaking. Where you see these green gaps, particularly headed offshore, it means it's deep and it's deeper water, and that green is mean because it could be taking you offshore.
It goes contrary to what you'd think as a non-beach person going to a beach, because you automatically assume that waves can dump you, can hurt you, and you look at this nice green flat section and think, oh, good place.
Well, that's absolutely right. I mean, waves can be scary for people who don't go in the water very much, and they seek out places where there aren't waves. And And rips look like great places to swim, and people put their kids in and off they go, and then they get in trouble. It happens every year. So there's a bit of a conundrum, because I'm telling people you should swim where there's white water, but often that's not where they want to swim. You know, on a small day, you go to the beach, the waves are about half a meter high, which is not a big deal. You can get rips stuck in these little channels that might be 10 meters wide that are still moving at about half a meter per second or even more. And that's faster. You know, if you're standing up in a half meter per second current, you're not standing up by much.
But it gets worse than that. Waves come in sets. And when a big set comes in, there's a build-up of water on the beach, and it makes a steeper gradient. So that means that when it flows back into the sea, it causes a strong rush. They call it a rip pulse.
And all rips have a habit of pulsing, which is they suddenly accelerate and double in speed for about 30 seconds. And that's caused when these big sets come in, they bring in extra water, pile the water up, and boom, off the rip. So even on these beautiful days, you get a set come in, and you can get 1 meter per second pulses, which is, you know, you're talking Olympic swim speeds.
That's frightening.
It is frightening, but it explains why so many people get caught in rips. I mean, there's tens of thousands of rescues in Australia alone in rip currents because we've got so many rips, and they're dangerous.
It was an early morning at Bondi when I went to meet Judy Law. She'd just been for a swim in the ocean, like she does 3 or 4 times every week. She gets in on one side of the beach, and she swims right across it. She looked amazing, like the quintessential beach woman. She had bright eyes from the exercise, and her hair was slightly stiff from the salt water. Her appearance of complete and utter well-being actually made me feel a bit jealous. She told me that she'd grown up on the beach, and she said that she'd never stopped swimming in what she calls the wilderness. But even with all that experience and passion, a couple of years ago when she was at Terrigal on the New South Wales Central Coast, she got into trouble.
As I started coming in, I realised I was swimming on the spot. And sometimes you can be swimming and not realise that that's happening. But looking in at the beach and then suddenly thinking, oh, I can't get in there. And it was getting a little bit dark and there was no one else on the beach, and I suddenly had this wave of panic. Your head suddenly goes into a spin, and then you start finding it difficult to breathe, and then you start thinking, oh, I'm getting very tired. And I really had to say to myself, no, just calm down, just swim across the rip, just be calm, it's going to be okay.
How long do you think the whole sort of event lasted?
I don't think it was that long. It was probably only about 5 or 10 minutes, because I quickly realised what needed to be done, and I felt very pleased when I got in, and my friend on the beach was getting worried because he knew he couldn't do anything about coming out to help, and I knew that as well.
Do you know how to spot rips?
Yes, I usually like to assess before I go in the water. I mean, rips can be good. Like at Bondi, there's a rip that's known locally as the Backpackers. And it's great. You go in there and it takes you right out to the point, and then you can swim around and then in at the beach.
So you effectively use yes. the rip to your advantage?
Yeah. Yes. Yeah, rips can be good. And it's a matter of understanding them and, I suppose, letting the fear go away.
That's the crowd reaction as they watch Dr. Rob Brander being completely wiped out by a wave at Maroubra in Sydney. And to make matters worse, he was holding a bucket of purple dye right up above his head, and it went all over him. And it's this trick, the dye, not the getting dumped, that earned Dr. Brander the nickname Dr. Rip from the lifeguards at Bondi. He kept on turning up at the beach and throwing the environmentally safe dye in the rips to monitor where they were flowing and how fast they were going. And as it turns out, rips are way more complex than you would think.
Look at that, straight as an arrow, it's going at a bit of an angle. I'm always amazed by these things. Even though waves are coming in, there's still this thing in the, just like these rivers of the ocean, going straight out. But as you come along the beach, there's really no rips at all. It's pretty flat all the way along. And maybe in the middle of the beach near Wanda, you might get some, but not where the flags are. That's really good. I'm just going to get my camera.
Now, there's an old scientific paradigm that dates back to literally the 1940s that says that rips will flow straight offshore and will take you way out to sea, like way beyond the breaking waves. And that's been in every textbook you find. And that's what I was taught, and that's what I believed. And I sort of thought, well, you know, I've been doing lots of purple dye releases over the year, and they go in circles. And even though I'm telling my students they go way out to sea, all these dye releases go in circles. And I jump in rips, and they don't take me out far to sea. And what we're finding after doing a lot of experiments and a lot of different types of beaches is that, yeah, some rips go in circles 100% of the time. They'll just recirculate, and if you were to stay afloat, you'd be happy as Larry. But they don't always do that. And, you know, one rip may recirculate, you move 100 meters down the beach, and that rip will spit you out the back about 50% of the time. And so we're learning, yeah, rips are definitely more complex than we thought. And it's maybe a bit dangerous to say they always go in circles. So then we started thinking, well, okay, well, if this is about people, let's start chucking people in rips. And we started chucking people in, mostly students. So we'd put GPS in their heads, and we'd go in groups, and we'd say, right, you know, you swim parallel right, you swim parallel left, you guys just float. And what we're finding is sometimes floating is great, sometimes it doesn't work. You just get spat out the back. Sometimes swimming parallel in one direction is quite easy. Sometimes if you go in the other direction, it's quite hard because rips often go at angles and there's all these rotations going on, and sometimes you swim with the current, which helps you get out. Sometimes you swim against the current and it's hard. So what we're finding is after doing all these experiments is that, well, there's not one single piece of advice that we can give people that's going to cover every situation when you're stuck in a rip. And what it's leading towards is some sort of combination of advice that you get stuck in a rip, start floating, see how you go. If that's not working, slowly try to swim towards the side of the rip. You know, you look for the way the waves are breaking. If that's not working, go back to floating. And hopefully, if you're in a patrolled beach, you're going to get rescued in that time. But the issue we're facing now is how do you communicate that to the public? It's hard enough trying to communicate a single message to the general public. Now communicating a complex message is tricky. So do we go one step further back and do we teach people how to spot rips? Which is what I do. And people tell me all the time, scientists, lifeguards, colleagues, you're wasting your time. You're not going to be able to teach people how to do that. But ultimately, I just want people thinking about rips. That when they go to the beach, they might not know what they look like, but they know that they're dangerous, and they're going to think twice about swimming outside the flags.
You're listening to Off Track on RN and online with me, Anne Jones. And that's the voice of Rob Brander from the University of New South Wales. Today's program is all about rip currents at the beach. In simple terms, waves push the water up onto the beach, and it has to drain back into the ocean somehow. It often does that through channels, and we call those channels rips. But that makes them sound a little bit innocent, and they're really not. An average of 21 people die every year in rips in Australia. They get pulled around by the water, away from where they want to go. They panic, and it's often that panic, or just the sheer exhaustion from fighting the current, that causes them to drown. Research around at the moment indicates that lots of rips go around in circles, and that if you just float, you'll come all the way back around into safety. But the problem is, the rips aren't completely predictable. As a result, it's hard to recommend any one action to a swimmer who is caught. Melanie Collings is from Newport, and about 2 years ago, on Easter Sunday, she had to try everything she knew about swimming in the sea to save her own life at Bungan Beach.
Really, honestly, one of the first things that kind of doomed my day a bit is we'd had a massive Easter weekend and we'd spent the whole day on the sofa watching movies. And so Jeremy said, come on, let's go for a swim, it'll make us feel better. And I was like, oh, not really, I'm not really in the mood. And he said, come on. I was like, okay. And so we walked down and got to the beach, literally dumped our stuff and went straight in. Jeremy, my hubby, was ahead of me, and I was feeling a bit average and kind of holding back a bit. And he was like, no, come on, it's beautiful. And I swam a bit further out. And anyway, the swell started to get pretty big. And so I waved to hubby and just went, I'm going back in. Yeah, so I felt that it was gosh, sorry, we've just hit the beach, and I'm like, oh! Yeah, so it felt like a bit of a struggle coming back in, and I was really starting to pull against it. And I thought, this doesn't feel right. I don't feel like I'm getting anywhere. And I checked where my bag was on the beach and realised that I'd been pulled. And I was like, oh, fuck! And I looked around and waved at Jeremy and said, you know, I was kind of, I think I'm in trouble. And he waved back, thinking I was just waving, and then saw my face. And my face must have just said, oh no, like, ah. So he started to head towards me, but I was getting pulled along. So I went into my brain, went, okay, what do? You swim, you don't swim into the shore, you swim alongside, and you swim parallel to the beach. And that was not really getting me anywhere. And I thought, I know what I've heard, go on your back, just lie on your back and go with it. So I flipped and I lay on my back, and because it was really dumpy and the waves were coming in, I just kept getting pulled under. So I then actually just went into blind panic. I just was floundering around. It felt like hours. It was probably seconds, minutes, I don't know, but it felt like I was there for a really long time. And just kept getting my legs swept underneath me and coming under the water. And I remember thinking the weirdest things. I remember thinking I was actually going to die. And it was the first time it's ever happened in my life. Hopefully it's the last time it's ever going to happen. But I just remember feeling it so strongly. And then laughing in the surf, laughing, thinking I can't die, I've only just got married. I just remember turning, and I was about here, I just remember turning and seeing these two really fit 20-something boys on the beach, and they'd clocked that I was in trouble and they'd started to run into the surf. And it was like, oh, it was the most amazing. I was like, I'm gonna be fine. They're gonna get me. And as soon as that was in my head, I just started to swim. And I don't know where this surge of energy came from. It just felt like a massive rush of adrenaline. And I just swam. And I got myself out the rip. And I stood up. And it was literally to my thighs. And I thought, oh, I nearly died in, or felt like I'd nearly died in inches of water, really.
Rips are the most dangerous thing we have on our beach. Surf Life Saving did a study recently where they looked at the long-term stats, and on average, 21 people a year drown in rip currents. Now, that's confirmed. Somebody saw somebody go on a rip and drown. The actual number is probably higher. It's probably 30 or 40. But that number of 21 fatalities a year is more than the average yearly fatalities caused by bushfires, floods, cyclones, and sharks combined. That's combined. And yet, rips do not get the attention that all those other hazards do. There's definitely a sense of complacency about the rip current hazard and the general public. I mean, they don't swim between the flags, for one, because somebody will drown in a rip. One person, a week later, another person might drown in another location. But because it doesn't happen en masse, you don't hear about it very often, unless it's a particularly emotive case and a child or a parent's involved. And it's lost in the background news, and the severity of the hazard isn't appreciated.
So what do we do to warn people of the dangers at beaches?
Well, I have to say that until recently, Australia has been pretty poor. We've got the flags up, so we've got lifeguards, we've got lifesavers, and that's largely there because of rips, so that's great. But so many of our beaches are completely unpatrolled. Even the patrol beaches are only seasonal in the most case, and they only cover a small section of beach. We have really poor signage. You go to the United States, and almost every public's access point has a big sign about rip currents. It's got a diagram, what they look like, what you should do if you get caught in one. Here, it's ad hoc. It might just say dangerous currents. You go to other countries, they've got pamphlets and brochures at the airport waiting for you in tourist accommodation. The Gold Coast and Queensland has been good at doing that, but the rest of the country has been pretty poor. We do go to schools. There's lots of us who run surf education in schools. But it's not necessarily consistent, it's not necessarily generic, and not all schools get it. So we need to definitely get better about communicating rip current knowledge to people. When I lived in New Zealand, there was always public service announcements on the television about what rips are. I've never seen one in Australia. Why not? Why isn't it in the cinemas? It should be on the planes. And it bothers me when I look at things like the WA government responding to 5 shark fatalities since 2011 and they pour in $20 million, and it's all about human life is paramount. Well, you know, twice as many people have died in rips in that time in WA, and what have they done? Nothing, probably.
Rob Branders isn't the only one who thinks that more should be done to alert swimmers to the dangers of rips.
You know, surf education needs to be part of the curriculum, particularly children and families living on the coast of the ocean. And when you think about the statistics of people being rescued, I think that would be my recommendation to any of the state governments or any of the educators.
You see, when he was about 13 or 14, Anthony Isaac's family had a day out on Bronte Beach. They were living in Parramatta, so it was a special day for the whole family. It was even more special to Anthony because he'd borrowed his neighbour's boogie board.
So I dive straight into the water with my boogie board, and I don't know whether I actually was in the flags or near the flags. Turned around, faced the shore, tried to catch my first wave, I missed it. Tried again, tried the second wave, I missed it. Tried the third. The next thing I knew, I was actually starting to drift further and further away from the shore, to the point that the size of the people on the shore were getting smaller and smaller and smaller. And that's when I started to feel like there was something wrong. I then did actually start to panic and start to get really anxious. And the harder I tried to paddle back in, the further out, and the harder it got to try and get back in. So I was actually at this stage really worried. I looked around and I could see myself starting to move towards the rocks at the back end of Bronte at that time. As I was forcing myself and used up all my energy to try and swim back in, I was actually exhausted. I even tried to swim in. I jumped off my, moved off my boogie board, got in and tried to swim back. That made the situation worse. Jumped on the board thinking, oh my God, I am going to die. I could see the rocks getting closer and closer. And I just thought, yeah, this is the end. I really thought I was going to die. And before I knew it, a lifeguard with the surf rescue board was right next to me going, here you go, mate, don't worry, everything's okay. I'm here to rescue you. I was in a panic. Told me to release my boogie board strap, which I was reluctant to do because it wasn't my boogie board, and I thought, if I lose this board, my friends are never going to talk to me again. So I reluctantly did the strap, and I could see it then drift out to the rocks. Jumped on the front of the board, as you do when you're being rescued. I held on to the two front ropes of the front of the board, and we proceeded to catch probably what I recall to be the best wave that I've ever caught in my life. And it was, you know, you could feel the back of the wave lift the back of you and straight down almost a roller coaster. When we kind of got to the bottom part of the wave, we were dumped. The lifesaver actually was thrown off the board. And all I remember is being thrown around, eyes closed, being thrown, oh my God, could this day get any worse? And finally surfaced, I was able to kind of look up, hold on to the board, and I could see the lifesaver come back and say, good man, get back on the board. We then proceeded to catch another wave. Again, probably the second best wave I've ever caught in my life. And to be honest with you, the same thing happened again where we got dumped again. But the thing was, once I got to shore, I was relieved. I looked around, I knew the boogie board was gone. And then the lifesaver kind of walked off to his post. As I turned around, my boogie board actually started to come in. So I'm thinking, wow, how good is this? What a day, what a morning. You know, that experience has stayed with me. The emotions or the fear of being caught in a wave still stay with me today. And even though throughout my years, and this happened when I was, you know, 13 or 14, I'm now in my early 40s, that experience is still embedded in my psyche.
And for Melanie, whose Easter was almost ruined by a rip at Bungan Beach 2 years ago, things are still very sensitive.
I feel quite emotional. I teared up a little bit, which is when I put my sunglasses back on, talking about it. But I actually feel quite glad that I'm standing here and I'm alive, and it's great. I've never been in the sea on my own. I've never been here in this sea, at this beach, on my own since the incident. It's quite a ferocious day. I mean, the sea to me today looks quite scary. And I do have a fear now that I never had before. And a respect, I think. I feel like we've got a different relationship. I've got a different relationship here now than I had before it happened. And I'm kind of thinking I might just pop in after we finish this. Only to my knees, not very far out, but just to get wet at Bungan Head again, at Bungan Beach.
And Melanie did. The day after I met her to record that interview, she emailed me to say that after I left, she eventually got into the water, and a little while later she was ducking the waves and had a little swim. Exorcising the demons, she said. And thank you to Melanie Collings, Anthony Isaac, Judy Law, and Dr. Rob Brander for appearing on the program today. For more information on RIP research and RIP safety, head over to the Off-Track website at abc.net.au/rn and follow the prompts. Next week on the program, we're going to head outside with an Andean condor who's been known to visit backyards near Taronga Zoo. She has plenty of room to spread her 3-metre wingspan in her aviary, but does she get something else out of flying free over Sydney Harbour? I'm Ann Jones, and I'll talk to you about free flying next week here on Off Track.